Welcome back to our second presentation on Introduction to Bonds. And in this presentation, we will go through the universe, if you will, of bonds from the least riskiest to the most riskiest. And find that bonds are, not much to them, folks. You pays your money, you get your interest, and then you get your money back. Whoopee. Slide 25. Treasury bonds, government bonds, T-notes. Remember the distinction between notes and bonds, 2 to 10 years or notes. Treasury bonds, greater than 10 years. And then TIPS, Treasury Inflation Indexed Obligations, which are guaranteed, which means usually you don't get much money if anything is guaranteed, to beat inflation, but not by much. And then the agency bonds, which are not direct obligations of the U.S. Treasury, no, but still considered very safe with almost no risk of default because the government was going to ride in on a white horse if anything ever happened, even though the people in Congress said, never going to happen. No, it did happen, folks. So stick with us as we discuss in more detail TIPS, Treasury Inflation Indexed Obligations, and agency bonds, mortgage-backed securities, collateralized debt obligations. They go by various names to make it more confusing. TIPS, slide 26. These are Treasury securities that provide protection against inflation by adjusting the investor's returns for the annual rate of inflation. So initially, they're going to pay less interest than the other regular Treasury bonds, but the par value is adjusted upward each year to keep pace with inflation. You see what's happening? Normally, a bond sold at 1,000, the par value stays at 1,000. But what these people are saying is, no. If inflation rises 1%, the bond is going to go up 1%. So the interest payment goes up every year as the par value increases. However, you must pay taxes on the interest and the increase in par value, even though you did not receive the increase in par value as cash. Thank you very much, IRS. But we'll see that that happens with other bonds also. So you're not only getting interest, your bond's value is increasing. Now remember, bond prices go up and down with interest rates, as we saw in our last presentation. But now the par value is going up. This is unlike other bonds, folks. It doesn't work. Most other bonds don't work this way. These are for people who are very worried about inflation. Now, mortgage-backed securities, mortgage-backed bonds, pass-through securities, participation certificates, collateralized debt obligations, collateralized mortgage obligations, mortgage-backed securities. They go by various names. And these are debt issues secured by pools of home mortgages issued primarily by government-sponsored entities. So the monthly payments consist of both interest and principal because what's happening is you and I are paying off our mortgages, we the little people, and so we're paying some interest and some principal. So these bonds that are issued by these vast organizations, Ginnie Mae, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. No, Fannie Mae is not a candy company, folks. They were sponsored by the Congress many years ago. And as we said, there was an unspoken guarantee that if they did run into trouble, the government would ride in on their white horse, even though all the Congress people and the other people in government said, no. These are companies that were sponsored, yes, by the Congress, but they are standalone companies. They were publicly traded companies. You could buy shares in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then the 2008 and 2009 crisis hit. The home loans sputtered as people stopped paying their mortgages, and you are proud owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac now. And there is much discussion about what to do with these guys. And nobody, everybody knows this current situation is not good. But nobody can agree on how to fix it. And we really do like the fact that they work pretty darn well, dear students. Let's take a look at slide 28. Here's how you and I look at the transaction when we go to get a home loan. Now, there might be a mortgage broker involved that is in between the bank, but we think of, or the mortgage company, we think of us going to the bank or the mortgage company or the credit union or a mortgage broker and getting a loan. And we get the loan for however much it is to buy the house, and we make the payments to the bank, right? Well, not anymore. That's the way it was decades ago. It's far more complicated now. And this graph, which I want you to know I created myself, I'm very proud of it. I'm not very artistic. No NFTs for me. This is what's actually going on. You see the bank that you're dealing with, or the mortgage broker, or the credit union. But really what happens is once you've made the mortgage, once you've made the loan, that loan is now an asset on the bank's balance sheet. And to you and me, that doesn't make sense. You know, it's a debt. Yeah. But to the bank, it's an asset. That's why banks, everything is backwards. You know, the bank has that asset. So what do they do with it? They can hold on to it. And some banks do. Some credit unions do. There used to be things called savings and loans. That's what they did all the time. But no. Most all of them turn around and sell those mortgages to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginny Mae. Again, these government-sponsored agencies, which are now owned by the United States government. And what they do is they bundle thousands of mortgages together into bonds that are sold to investors all around the world, individual and mostly institutional investors. The investors in this is, remember, here are we, the little people, and there's the mutual fund managers and pension fund managers and life insurance companies that buy the bonds, and they receive the pass-through payments from the homeowners. So you make your payment to the bank, which turns around and gives it to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which then passes it through to the investors who own these bonds. It's called securitization, collateralized debt obligations, pass-through securities, participation certificates, mortgage-backed bonds. And as we said, as citizens of the U.S. of A., you are proud co-owners of Fannie and Freddie. And believe it or not, folks, they're actually contributing billions of dollars every year to the Treasury. Now, is this something we really want to continue the way it is? Most people would say no, but how do we fix it? There are people who say we want Fannie and Freddie to be off on their own. And some of them have purchased the shares, which are now worthless, with the hope that they become worth something when Fannie and Freddie are rehabilitated. Others are thinking, well, if this is such an important part of our economy, because we love it when people buy homes normally, shouldn't we keep it the way it is? And others who say, no, you don't want socialism, the government in the business of business. That's not the government's business, if that makes any sense. So on the website, and of course, all you can do is type in Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae controversy into any search engine, and you will see dozens of articles about what we should do, what we can't do, what we won't do, whatever you decide what needs to be done as a citizen and a voting member of the society. Good luck. Slide 29. This idea, this concept of securitization has been morphed to other parts of the economy. The process of transforming lending vehicles such as mortgages into marketable securities spread into what is called asset-backed securities. They're similar to mortgage-backed securities, but instead of mortgages, they're bank loans, leases, assets like car loans, credit card loans, patents, stocks, bonds, even, and even Bowie bonds. David Bowie. Yeah, you remember him? He's well thought of now because of space and what's going on with SpaceX. And they immortalized him by sending Starman off to Mars in the first test of this Falcon Heavy spacecraft. Mr. David Bowie, I think this was the 1980s. You could look it up, folks. It actually happened. Another group called REM did the same thing. He went to the investment community and said, look, I'm David Bowie and I need some cash. I'm going to be putting together these artistic projects. Will you lend it to me in the form of bonds? And believe it or not, all the bonds sold. Investors said, okay, Mr. Bowie, we trust you. All the bonds were paid back. And Mr. Bowie became a very successful artist, very successful indeed. And then, as I said, the other group, REM, did the same thing. So check it out. Collateralized bond obligations, structured investment vehicles. They may be decent investments. I don't know. I'm not an expert in bonds. But hey, Mr. Bowie paid back his bonds. I think REM did too. So check it out. So what is this? It is a very important part of our debt economy, but very important tool for those that need money, right? They need to borrow money. They can securitize, turn these credit card loans, these patents, and other inventions into debt obligations, and then pay back the money they borrowed over time, you know, paying interest, of course. So think about it. Now, finally, we get to muni bonds, municipals. These are debt securities issued by states, counties, cities, water authorities, bridge authorities, school districts, and most all of these are tax exempt. They are free of federal income taxes. But if you have any capital gains, those are not interest, and those are not tax exempt. By the way, the IRS doesn't like the term tax-free. They want you to say tax-exempt. Now, there are some exceptions. Some of these are not tax-exempt if you're subject to the alternative minimum tax, which means you're making a pretty good amount of money and you have some serious deductions, so you have to be careful. But in general, the Constitution of the United States says the feds can't tax the states and local governments. The states and local governments can't tax the feds. That's why United States Treasury bonds and the TIPS and the like, they are free from state or local income taxes because the states and locals can't tax the feds. And that's why muni bonds are free from federal income taxes because the feds can't tax the states. Now, the states can tax one another. So if you have a muni bond in Arizona, California says, oh, you're going to pay us interest on that. But you're not going to pay the federal government on interest on that. And as we'll see, muni bonds are very popular with individual investors, high income and high net worth taxpayers. And why is that? Well, because that tax-exempt status really makes the bonds worth a whole lot more than it does for us workaday grunts, as we'll see when we get to the calculations on tax equivalent yield. And as we will also see in one of the advertisements, some muni bonds are insured, which is obviously a desirable feature, assuming the insurance company doesn't go bust. There are some types of bonds we want to take a look at, slide 31. General obligation bonds are bonds that are backed by the full faith and credit and taxing power of the issuer, whereas revenue bonds are municipal bonds that require the payment of principal and interest only if sufficient revenue is generated by the insurer. They are generally considered less desirable than general obligation bonds, Why? Because the revenue from the water authority or the bridge authority doesn't, you know, materialize, then, oh well, you know, they go through default. Whereas general obligation bonds, the entity must raise taxes. However, I have listened to very smart people who do invest in bonds, I don't, who've said, no, 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 we like revenue bonds, especially after we've done our thorough research and it looks like this bridge or water authority or whatever it's going to be is going to more than sufficiently, road authority is more than sufficient to pay off the bonds. So they've said they like revenue bonds because they pay better. Now, one of the situations here in San Diego County was that the South Bay Expressway, not the South Bay Freeway, you know, they didn't ask me. I would have told them, don't call it the South Bay Expressway. You're just going to create confusion because there's already a South Bay Expressway. But that one, I could have told them, you know, take me out to lunch. I would have told you that's not going to make it. It's not going to make it. I mean, obviously, some people are going to, they like the convenience. They'll take the South Bay Expressway. But others are going to drive, you know, out of their way to take 805, which is free. And that's exactly what happened. It didn't work out that the bonds were going to be repaid. So Sandag took over from the Australian company that had originally built the freeway project. And of course, there's probably a whole lot more underneath the surface that's going on that I'm not aware of. But from my vantage point, I could have told you it wasn't going to be a big winner. And if you want to tell me that I'm a goofball for saying that that wasn't a winner, go right ahead. But other people agree with me. They say, no, I'm not going to go on that darn thing. I'll just go across to 805 and then up. And then special tax bonds, which we've already made mention of. Southwestern Community College, the South Bay voters approved these bond issues, and what did it do? It put a special tax on the homeowners, the property taxes, to pay for the stadium and the other parts of the new math science building and the like. Fixing up the campus after almost 60 years. we've been here for a long time. Make sense? Yes. So do you think most people who vote for these things understand what's going on? Not sure. Okay. What are the municipal bond tax advantages on slide 32? Well, as we said, they are free from federal income taxes, which means we're going to have to compute a taxable equivalent yield. That's in our next chapter. And if you purchase them in that municipality, they are also often, not always, but free from state and local taxes. So in other words, the state of California says, hey, if you buy municipal bonds based here in the state of California, doesn't matter where, school districts up and down the states, cities, counties, and the like, then we will not charge you the income tax on the interest. Cool. So we call these double tax free or double tax exempt. They are free from both federal and state income tax. So we're going to have to do a second calculation to do the taxable equivalent yield for both federal and state exempt bonds. The higher the tax bracket of the investor, the higher the taxable equivalent yield, as we'll see in our next chapter, which is why these muni bonds are very, very popular with high net worth individuals. I remember when the governing board was giving a presentation on the bonds. And the one governing board member said, we want to make sure everybody in the South Bay knows about these so they can all invest in these. And I was shaking my head and I didn't say anything to anybody. I thought, no, 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 no. You're going to be selling maybe some folks, you know, in Coronado, believe it or not, is in the Southwestern Community College District. But us workaday work folks, we're not buying most muni bonds. As we'll see when we take a look at the advertisements, there's a $25,000 minimum. And capital gains, if any, are never tax exempt, folks. The capital gains are taxable. Corporate bonds. So we're down to corporate bonds. So we've gone start with treasuries and the, you know, bonds around treasuries, associated with treasuries, and then munis. And now we're taking a look at corporate bonds. And corporate bonds have a pecking order. There are secured bonds, and then there are unsecured bonds. Does this sound familiar? Some of you in Business 121, Financial Planning, Money Management, we talked about secured credit cards that were secured by a savings account. The same thing is true here. Some bonds are secured by the equipment or real estate, mortgage bonds, collateral trust bonds. And then there are senior and junior bonds, kind of like a second mortgage on your home. Right, the pecking order. Unsecured bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the corporation. That means if something goes wrong, you have to go after whatever you can find, right? If it's a mortgage-backed bond or a collateral trust bond, you can go after the equipment, whatever it be, the plant or whatever is the collateral, but not in the case of these guys. And, you know, I still don't really understand how to say debentures or debentures. I've heard people say both, and I'm sure one of them is wrong and one of them is right. So you figure which one's the right one, debentures. And then there are some bonds that are required only if a certain amount of income is earned. Obviously, not the most desirable. The corporation, whether or not they earn income, they said they were going to pay you those interest payments. So you hope they're going to keep paying you and hope they don't wind up in default. Now, zero coupon bonds could be muni bonds or they could be corporate bonds. The treasuries never issued them, although some interesting and enterprising individuals have turned some treasury bonds into zero coupon bonds. So now what are these things? Now, folks, zero coupon bonds are bonds that do not pay interest. Remember the coupon payments? Right. Even though we don't have coupons anymore, it's still in the language. And when you're clipping your coupon, you're earning your interest. So these bonds are sold at a deep discount from par value. Remember the savings bonds that you bought for $25 and they redeemed at $50 or $75 or whatever? This is the same idea. You buy them at a discount, and instead of receiving the interest in cash, the bond simply accrues, which is the accounting word, grows, increases in value until maturity. So, for example, if you had a 20-year bond that was paying 6.25%, and all the bonds in this class are $1,000 denominations, you would buy it for $300. And then in 10 years, it would be worth $550. And then in the next 10 years, it would be worth $1,000. So, kind of neat. You don't really need the interest. You just want the capital appreciation. Well, what's the disadvantage? What are the disadvantages? They're very sensitive to interest rate changes. They exhibit wide price swings, but if you don't care about ever selling your bonds, it doesn't bother you. Plus, here's the real kicker. The IRS expects you to pay taxes on the accrued interest even if you didn't receive it in cash. Thanks a lot, guys. In other words, my bond went up $20 last year or whatever it went up. I got to pay income tax on that even though I didn't get the $20. So what do people do? They put them in their IRAs, how tax deferred or Roth IRA tax free. Or they will buy muni zero bonds, zero coupon bonds, because they are already tax exempt, of course. Of course. So zeros are something you should know about. They don't constitute a huge portion of the population of a universe of bonds, but there's something you should know about. And we're going to ask you a couple of questions on the assignment that's going to make you think in chapter 10. We're going to ask you a couple of questions that are going to make you think, a little puzzle, rompecabeza problems, break your mind, break your head problems. And I hope you will I go back to this slide and internalize what a zero coupon bond is. It doesn't pay interest. It simply grows in value. Now, okay, are the children out of the room? Okay, it's time to talk about junk bonds, speculative bonds, distressed bonds, non-investment grade bonds. These are high-risk bonds, high-risk securities that have low credit ratings, but produce high yields. High-yield bonds, non-investment grade bonds. These are issued primarily by corporations, but there are some muni junk bonds, not too many. Traditionally, you did not want to talk about junk bonds in polite company, but in the 1980s, junk bonds became an entire industry as companies not large enough to issue bonds began to issue bonds with very high interest rates. And so that attracted the scammers. One such company that was used as a vehicle was Vagabond Inns, which is based here in San Diego and is a legitimate company. The company really didn't have anything to do with it. They were innocents. It was the people running the company. Look up Mr. Ivan Boesky and the other gentleman who, I can't remember his name all of a sudden. But if you look up Ivan Boesky, you'll see the other gentleman's name who they were the model for the movie Wall Street. You know, the movie about the greed is good. That guy, Gordon Gekko, is the guy in the movie. I can't remember his name. Michael Milken. There it is. I knew I'd come. It's latency, folks. Michael Milken. Look up Michael Milken and Ivan Boesky. Very high risk, but often offer the opportunity for large capital gains as well as high income. See, unlike most all bonds, junk bonds tend to follow the stock market. And we'll discuss correlation later on. But when the stock market does well, stocks do well, right? I'm sorry, when the economy does well, stocks do well, and so do the junk bonds. Whereas the bonds in general maybe don't do poorly, but they don't certainly do as well as stocks. When the stock market does poorly, it's because the economy is tanked. High risk junk bonds, high yield bonds, distressed bonds, speculative bonds, they tend to tank with the stock market. Yeah. And if you go back to that chapter 4 presentation where we showed you the risk versus return profile of one company, of their mutual funds, you saw that the junk bonds went down as much as the balance fund and the equity income funds. So we don't usually discuss junk bonds in polite company. Foreign bonds, U.S. pay bonds. Some companies and countries mostly, decided they were going to make loans and pay them back in dollars. You don't see too much of this discussed anymore because it blew up in their faces when the dollar became very strong and their currency became weak. For us as U.S. investors, this is kind of cool because we don't have to worry about our currency fluctuations. But for them, it turned out to be a nightmare. Yeah, unless the dollar were to fall, then it would work out for them, but that's not what happened in their cases. If we buy bonds outside the United States, then we find that we have to change our dollars into that currency. We have to deal with the same currency fluctuation risk that we discussed in Chapter 5. If the U.S. dollar rises relative to the foreign currency, well, then the value of the bond will fall. The value of the bond interest payments falls. And if the dollar falls relative to the foreign currency, all other things being equal, and they never are, the value of the bond will rise. This is true of all foreign investments. The dollar goes up. Remember the seesaw? Same idea. The value of our foreign investments goes down. The dollar goes down, and the value goes up. It's very difficult for individual investors to purchase. Much easier now with these international brokerage accounts, which allow you to move your currencies back and forth. But in my humble opinion, that's why we have global bond mutual funds or international bond mutual funds. The bond investors at the mutual fund companies have tremendous resources, and let them do the foreign bond buying. You decide. Now, okay, stretch, everybody. We're in the home stretch here now because we've gone through from the riskiest to the least risky. I'm sorry, the other way around. We went from the riskiest down to the least risky, the junk bonds. And, of course, foreign pay bonds, the same kind of thing happens within other countries. So now let's turn our attention to how this system works, right? You go to a bank and ask for a loan, they're going to do a credit check. They're going to want to see, are you a, you know, credit-worthy individual? Well, the same thing is true for bond issuers. There is a industry out there that is tasked with rating the bond issuers. And they use a system that I think is kind of silly, but hey, I didn't design it, and it's been around for a lot longer than I've been alive. It's called the bond rating system, where you start with three A's and triple A and then double AA. We'll see it on the next slide. The higher the rating, the better the quality. And then there are two largest rating agencies, although there are a couple, few others, Standard & Poor's and Moody's. And there's Fitch's and Weiss, and then there's somebody else, I can't remember. You can think of them as idiot lights on your dashboard. Now, I'm not a motorhead, and my understanding is that idiot lights, you know, the oil light and the like, when they come on, it's a lot better than it used to be. But when I started driving a million years ago, when the idiot light went on, you just kept driving. You know, you're toast. Your engine's just keep driving. It's like you got a couple miles before the engine seizes. You're supposed to pull over right away. I know. But it was too late by the time the idiot light came on. Now, my understanding is they're better now, so don't listen to Payano. He's not a motorhead. In the wake of the 2001-2002 corporate scandals, the rating agencies were caught completely off guard. They didn't downgrade Enron and WorldCom and Tyco and Global Crossing until they were practically in default. They were again called to task because of the 2008-2009 mortgage-backed bond crisis. Yep, you guessed it. They screwed up again, but this time they almost brought down the entire economy. Uh-huh. And what happened to them? They got called up before Congress and said, "We're sorry. It won't happen again until the next time." And of course, nothing happened to them at all. And here are the grades, folks. AAA, AAA, BBB. So the highest grade is AAA. And you would think the United States government would have AAA, and it did for decades. And then after the 2008 debacle where they got caught flat-footed, and then in 2000, I think it was 11 or 12, when the Congress and the White House couldn't agree on certain things, and it looked like the United States government was going to go into default. Of course it wasn't. They were just threatening to do it. They dropped it to AA+, but I think that's ridiculous. And Warren Buffett said, no, the United States government should be AAA, which doesn't exist. So I agree with him. The United States government's not going anywhere anytime soon. And then once you get down to BBB, that's the last investment grade rating. Once you fall to BB, now you're a junk bond. Anything less than BBB is non-investment grade, speculative, distressed. And then it's BB, B, B, so triple C, 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 and then D, meaning default. Anything down here, folks, oh, it's too late. The idiot light's going on, and that company's probably never coming back. Although, we're going to see an example of a company that did come back from triple C. So stick with us, or it's in Canvas, it's on the website, and we would show it, of course, right here in the or somewhere along the lines. We would show it in the face-to-face class, but you're going to see it as one of the ancillary presentations. Okay, Ford, that's who it is. So watch for Ford bond quotes in your travels in the website or Canvas. So you see, AAA, AAA, BBB, BB. What is the difference between AA and AAA and A? I don't know. I don't work for these companies. But it reminds me of eggs. You go to the store and you see AAA eggs or AA eggs or B eggs or BBB eggs. They all look like eggs to me. They don't look any different. By the way, in Southwestern Community College is AA. So that we're a high grade. There we are. Yes, we are. The agencies further fine-tune their ratings with putting a plus sign or a minus sign. That's what Standard & Poor's does. Whereas Moody's adds a 1, a 2, or a 3, meaning, you know, better, better, best. Good, better, best, yeah. So I think it's kind of silly. I mean, what's the difference between double A and double A plus or double A and double A minus? I think that's what we are. I think we're double A minus, Southwestern Community College. So we're not double A, we're double A minus. I think it's silly, but I don't work for these companies and they make a lot of money doing this. What? They get paid to do this? Yes. If you're the state of California or you're the, or I don't know if the state of California has to pay, but if you're a corporation or you're a school district or a local authority, you have to pay these buggers to do this. You think there's a conflict of interest here? Yeah. Those mortgage-backed securities that were based on liar loans back during the housing bubble of the 2000s were AAA rated and sold all around the world as the best of the best. And when they pulled back the curtain, they were based on people's lies that, yeah, I can make the payments even when the price of the loan. See, you have to go back and discuss in chapter 7 of Business 121, we discuss the liar loans, the option arm, the adjustable optional adjustable rate mortgage, that all you had to do was say, yeah, I'm making $100,000, even though I'm making 30. And they gave you a $500,000 loan. And the first year, the payments were $1,600. And the next year, they were $2,100. And the next year, they were $2,600. And after year four, they were $3,000. And now you can't make those payments anymore. And this is what happened. But you didn't worry about it because prices were rising at 20% a year. And what did you care? In 3 years, you can refinance or sell your house for $300,000 more than you paid for it. Because that's what was happening for at least a few years. So as long as the music was going, playing, everybody was happy until the music stopped playing. And that's when the whole thing fell apart. And that's when Standard & Poor's and Moody's were yelled at by the Congress. Why did you? What is the matter with you? Obviously, there's a conflict of interest here. And they said, yo, perish the thought. We are above reproach. We had nothing to do with the money that they paid us. It's not perfect, folks. Write your erected Congress, bozo. Now, slide number 40, bond trading. Well, bond trading is very difficult for retail investors. Trading volume is often thin. Why? Because most people hang on to their bonds. Most bonds trade over the counter, which means you got to go find people that are holding on to these bonds. And bond traders normally trade in $100,000 range or more. If you have your $1,000 and come out, I'm buy. No, it doesn't work that way. Go away. Don't expect to be treated well. Remember John Merriweather from chapter one, who was trading millions of dollars of bonds? Yes. Investors use banks and other entities to trade bonds, as well as brokers. And there's this newspaper that I guess is online now. I've never really perused it that often. It's called The Bond Buyer for people who love bonds. However, there is an exception. The TreasuryDirect.gov website, where you get the same price that people who are buying and selling millions of dollars of bonds at a time get. Very cool. But otherwise, how do most of us buy our bonds? Through mutual funds, right? Yeah, it just makes more sense, folks. Slide 41, how are bonds quoted? Well, again, there's a little bit of craziness going on. Why don't they just tell you how much the bonds are worth? No, they don't do that. They quote them as a percentage of par. So if you see 97.25, that means 97.25% of par. But since par is almost always $1,000, that means it's $972.50. And remember, in this class, all bonds for our purposes will always be $1,000 par. So you see you don't see the percent side, by the way. You see 97.25, you just move the decimal place one to the right, and know that it's $972.50. A bond quote for $97.25 is a bond selling at a discount. A bond selling at a premium would be quoted above 100, and a bond selling at par would be quoted at 100. And we're going to use FINRA for our bond quotes. There's a link in the website in Canvas. But I think they're actually using Morningstar. But if you go to Morningstar's website, you can't find these quotes. So figure that one out. It used to be even weirder, folks. when you were dealing with bonds, they used to have this really strange way. I'm not even going to explain it to you. But I think, again, it's another one of those situations where we want you to understand that you'll never understand this. We will be your broker and take care, good care of you. Why don't you just put the price of the darn bond there? Don't ask me. And that is our introduction to bonds. So when we come back in our next chapter, we're going to now dig into the numbers. We're going to learn how to calculate the taxable equivalent yield, the yield to maturity, the current yield. And we're going to look at valuation, bond prices. Very cool. You're going to see something that is going to look very familiar. Discounted cash flow model for bonds. So maybe bonds really aren't as boring as we say they are. Well, yeah, they are. They really are. See you in our next chapter, dear students. We're so proud of you.